It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Increasingly, engineers are concerned about locks and dams along the Ohio River in this day and age.
They tried to arrange the barges as best they could to prepare for this type of thing. The weight of the ice was too much.
We'll hear more about that in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. With the help of the son of a famous televangelist, Governor Jim Justice plugged a proposal for counties in Virginia to join West Virginia. As Dave Mistich reports, the pitch for secession is part of an effort now dubbed Vexit.
Jerry Falwell Jr., a lawyer, Baptist, president of Liberty University, and the son of televangelist Jerry Falwell Sr., joined Governor Jim Justice in Martinsburg Tuesday to announce their shared support of counties leaving Virginia for West Virginia. The two touted Governor Justice's ties to President Trump. Falwell pointed to Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and the Democratic-controlled General Assembly proposing gun control legislation as a reason for these invitations to be taken seriously. Governor Justice echoed Falwell's sentiments.
If you're out there, no matter where you may be, Virginia, or wherever you may be, as an individual or as a business or whatever, West Virginia is waiting for you with open arms.
The West Virginia Senate adopted a resolution that invites Frederick County, Virginia, to join the Mountain State. Frederick County officials have said they aren't interested in becoming a part of West Virginia, but a proposal in the House of Delegates would open that invitation to additional counties in Virginia. The Virginia General Assembly would have to approve counties that voted to leave the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
West Virginia lawmakers are considering a bill that would authorize public and private hospitals to employ police officers. Emily Allen has more.
If House Bill 4540 passes, hospitals would be responsible for all costs, including police training. In testimony Tuesday morning, an official from Charleston Area Medical Center said the hospital already employs about 70 security guards. If the bill passes, CAMC would hire about 13 police officers. Two delegates voted against sending the bill onward with a favorable recommendation Tuesday morning. They shared fears about the bill giving private entities the power that comes with having law enforcement. They also expressed concern about an expanded police presence keeping people from seeking treatment.
I understand the concerns that may have been raised.
Delegate Moore Capito, a Republican from Kanawha County, introduced the bill.
But again, I think the pluses far outweigh the minuses with this bill. We've narrowly tailored this bill to apply to hospitals in instances where keeping peace and a good and safe environment for patients is necessary.
House Judiciary members requested the Finance Committee, which receives the bill next, send it straight to the full House for consideration, since there's no anticipated cost. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
2019 was a tumultuous year for coal in West Virginia. Production and employment continued to slide, and the industry experienced multiple high-profile bankruptcies. For the legislature today, reporter Brittany Patterson spoke with industry officials and analysts about their predictions for 2020. She begins this report with a visit to the state's most state-of-the-art coal-burning power plant, which is taking an unusual step.
Located just outside of Morgantown, West Virginia, the Longview coal-fired power plant is one of the most advanced, newest, and cleanest burning coal plants in the world. Longview Power CEO and President Jeff Keffer points at the towering three-building complex.
The second building is the boiler building. It's 16 stories tall. That's the boilers in there. That's where the action occurs, where the coal is spewed in. It gets burned very, very hot temperatures and turns the water that's going up through the boiler tubes into steam, which we use in the steam turbine.
Construction finished on the plant in 2011. Retrofits were completed in 2015. Keffer says the technology used at Longview is state of the art. While many aging coal-fired power plants in West Virginia and across the country are struggling to stay competitive, Longview runs 24/7. Longview isn't owned by a power utility. It's a merchant plant or independent plant and sells power directly to regional grid operator PJM Interconnection.
We're able to produce electricity more efficiently than any other coal plant in our region, the PJM region. We're able to do it at lower cost than just about any other fossil fuel. That includes gas-fired plants.
And yet, in 2019, Longview announced it was going to diversify how it produces electricity.
So we wanted to combine with our clean coal plant the benefits of having a large gas-fired plant, and then the benefits of having a renewable solar plant to that as well.
A 1,200-megawatt gas plant and 70-megawatt solar farm will sit adjacent to the coal plant. Keffer says branching out makes economic sense.
On the solar side, there are companies, often most large companies, Facebook, Google, others, that have set corporate objectives of obtaining all their power from renewable sources. They're willing to pay significantly more for that power.
Keffer says building a gas plant also made business sense, given the region's abundance of natural gas. Natural gas production in the Appalachian Basin has grown rapidly since 2012 and is projected to grow exponentially over the next few decades. Neighboring states have taken advantage of low-priced gas by building gas plants. West Virginia is still primarily burning coal, and although power prices in West Virginia are still lower than many states, the Mountain State has gone from having some of the cheapest electricity in the country to being in the middle of the pack. And as the nation's coal plants age, Keffer says their operating and maintenance costs will rise. While he understands the need to support coal, he says consumers will pay.
We try to keep those plants running, partly because of employment issues, partly because of those who extract coal from the ground and mine it. But at the same time, we're not doing anybody any favors, particularly ratepayers for the utilities, paying the costs of the losses those plants are incurring right now.
Brian Lego analyzes coal trends for West Virginia University's Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
2020, I think, will end up being a weaker year.
He says, despite efforts by the Trump administration to reduce regulations on the coal industry, all signs point to the domestic coal market continuing to struggle.
Domestic markets have essentially shriveled in size because of what's happened with respect to the electric power sector, transitioning to gas, renewables, all sort other fuel sources beyond coal. So that's really changed the whole shape and size of the coal industry's performance.
2019 marked some very high-profile coal bankruptcies, including of Black Jewel. The West Virginia-based company suddenly declared bankruptcy in July. More than 1,000 miners had their paychecks clawed back. Dozens of miners spent nearly 2 months blocking a loaded coal train in Harlan County, Kentucky, in protest. Last year, coal companies Blackhawk and Murray Energy also sought bankruptcy protection.
Went in there and mined that coal. Now they want their money.
Bill Rainey with the West Virginia Coal Association says, despite those setbacks, he's confident West Virginians will continue mining coal.
The domestic need for steam coal to make electricity is diminished. Still there, and we still got the best coal in the world here in West Virginia. So we got the best coal miners, the best coal mine managers. So we got all that equation put together, but they're still struggling, and it's because of the market sensitivity that we have.
But markets could be our problem this year. Lego at WVU says since 2017, West Virginia has benefited from overseas market demand for metallurgical or steel coal. But that demand is cooling off.
As far as the met coal market is concerned, we've seen a decline in prices, and that price is a reflection of the state of demand, how it's starting to come off of these hot sugar highs that we had in 17 and 18. So things are coming down and recalibrating, I think, is the word you want to use.
In recent months, coal operators, including Blackhawk and Copperglow, have closed or idled mines in the region. Preliminary federal data show while employment was mostly stable from 2018 to 2019, coal production in West Virginia fell about 25% last year. And in the last decade, employment has fallen by more than one-third.
That was energy and environment reporter Brittany Patterson. She originally reported that story for the Legislature Today, your source for daily legislative news and information. Tune in each evening at 6 on TV, radio, or online, or at 7 p.m. on the West Virginia channel. And here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, we need to hear from you during the legislative session. Tell us, what do you wonder about energy policy in West Virginia? From renewable energy to coal, we love to hear your questions. Go to our website, wvpublic.org, and let us know. Your question might be selected as the topic of a news report during this legislative session. Serious waterway accidents have been on the rise in recent years in the Ohio River watershed. An investigation by Alexandra Kanick of the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting found that an increase in rain might be the problem. On this, the story is part of A Good River, a collaboration about the environment, economy, and culture of the Ohio River.
The Ohio River had risen more than 12 feet in 30 hours, and the icy water was moving fast. As a fleet of 27 barges sat waiting for the right conditions to get towed through the locks and dams near Pittsburgh, big chunks of ice began building up behind them. It was about 6:15 a.m. when a towing vessel captain saw sparks.
They tried to arrange the barges as best they could to prepare for this type of thing.
That's Liam LaRue, chief of the Major Marine Investigations at the National Transportation Safety Board. His unit investigated this incident in 2018.
The weight of the ice was too much and ended up breaking a bunch of barges away.
They sunk, ran aground, or were otherwise damaged. Like most accidents, there were a few factors, faulty equipment, for example, but the biggest reason was the rain. High water makes navigating more challenging, and the NTSB is increasingly pointing to heavy rainfall after shipping-related incidents happen.
You know, we'd get a few accidents a week, and they were all just high water-related.
Over the past decade, federal data show that rainfall has contributed to more serious marine accidents in the Ohio watershed, at a time when climate change means more extreme weather. And a KYCIR analysis found more hazardous cargo moving down the Ohio River recently than past years. Dangerous cargo has been an issue before in Louisville. In 1972, much of the Portland neighborhood was evacuated after a barge hauling chlorine gas got lodged in the McAlpin Dam, putting thousands of lives at risk if it had broke.
As a result of this and other frequent casualties, they set up a vessel management system in Louisville.
That's Nick Fischella, director of the Vessel Traffic Service the U.S. Coast Guard runs in Louisville. It's only one of 12 places in the country where the Coast Guard operates this kind of special service to assist with navigation. And it's the only one that's inland. That's because the city's stretch of the Ohio is complicated to navigate. It has narrow bridges and excessive debris. But Frischella says the biggest challenge during high water is the McAlpin locks and dam.
Once these increased river levels and currents and velocities pick up, they create a hazardous condition called an outdraft condition, which is actually pulling a vessel that's trying to transit down through the canal there towards the lock and dam. Sometimes they'll catch them off guard if they're not steering it correctly, or they need the entire channel width to get themselves through there safely.
High water can be so difficult because it actually changes the riverbed, according to Coast Guard Lieutenant Commander Tequila Powell.
You get a lot of areas where, you know, silt and mud are pushed up in the area, and that's not usually there. And then a vessel is going down the river and they ground in that area.
There are some resources to help mariners avoid trouble, like 10-day river forecasts and the Coast Guard's local river guides. But these efforts are short term. Climate change is taking hold now. But when it comes to its effect on river safety, government agencies aren't focused yet on what's coming downstream. For the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, I'm Alexandra Kanick.
This story is part of a series, Good River, produced by 7 nonprofit newsrooms in the Ohio watershed region. More stories at ohiowatershed.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.